The Why Me Project, an exclusive presentation of Faith Strong Today.
Episode number
157.
And we are inching up to 160, which is then 200 is right around the corner.
Ah, yes. Your math is so good.
I know. I don't want to brag during these quarantining times. I've been doing my ones and twos and my A's and B's, if you know what I mean.
Well, good for you. The joys of teaching your kids at home then.
My wife is doing a lot better than I am, if we're being honest.
Fair enough.
But we are, as you had mentioned, episode 157, and we have a great guest, as we always say, doing incredible things.
Yeah, and an amazing story, and she's just doing such amazing work.
She is Linda O'Dell, and we are excited. Linda, how are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me.
Linda, we like to ask this skill testing question because we never know where it's going to go. Who are you, and where did you come from?
That is a big question. Where do I start? I live in Oklahoma. I've been raised in Oklahoma. I was actually born in, not too many people know, I was born in Anchorage, Alaska. My dad was stationed in the military up there, and he committed suicide. And that's a whole other story. And we ended up moving to Oklahoma. But my early life, started out with a God moment there, But in 1981, I got married to George. We've been married 39 years.
Ooh,
yes,
wow.
I'm that old. Hard to believe, but yes. But my cancer story kind of goes along in that because I am a cancer survivor. And in 1981, we were going to get married. And like a few months before that, I found out I had a very rare cancer. Then after we got married, 3 months later, I still newlywed and all that. I ended up having major surgery and going through about a year and a half recovery. God's hand was on that because now, 39 years later, I can say cancer survivor, and you hear those words all the time, but cancer survivor, he's brought me so far removed from that, I can forget that I'm a cancer survivor. He has healed me so much. It's not even an issue, and it doesn't even really come up in my mind anymore until I'm talking to someone about my life, and I'm a cancer survivor, and I'm not trying to make light of it. It's
sure.
Just that God is so good, and he heals you so thoroughly, that it's not even an issue anymore, And so, but I am a cancer survivor, and I am, I went through all of that as a newlywed, and so that's the reason why we don't have children, because I can't have them, but I've always had cats and dogs, and right now we've got two fur babies, and so they keep us kind of busy. But also then in 1998 is when I started actually doing prison ministry. It started out as a visitor because my husband had a relative that got wrongly convicted, which happens too much in this country, but his niece got wrongly convicted and got arrested for something she didn't do, went to prison, served 7 years of a 12-year sentence.
Wow.
And so, and just about wrecked the family, of course, you can imagine. But we would go every week to visit her, my husband and myself, her mother, grandparents. During the process of time, we'd meet the other ladies that were getting visits. We'd meet the other families and, hear their stories and just have a bonding time with those ladies. And time after time, when I would go, the Lord would just start talking to me, and he'd say, okay, you're visiting, this one family member, but what about all them other women, What about all the ones that are not in this visiting room? What about all the ones that are on the yard? The facility that I go to, at any one time, there could be 1,200 women there. Long story short, I ended up, through a long period of time, because he would just talk to me. He talks to me in prison ministry language. He just always ministers to me with that. And so I ended up switching from being a visitor to being a volunteer, and went through the process to become a Department of Corrections volunteer. And I've been going every week for 22 years. I've been blessed to help with different programs and church services and, all different kind of programs and special events. But for the last 20 of those 22 years, I've been working with Gifts Charities Incorporated, which is a nonprofit ministry that I'm a board member and a volunteer for. And our primary thing that we've been doing ongoing for 20 years is a weekly mentor program. That's our main focus. And what that is, is we meet with the women. We have a core group of volunteers, which we're always looking for more volunteers. But we go in every week. We'll have each volunteer will meet with one or more women in a small group setting, and we'll have like a time of Bible study, prayer, a testimony, just like kind of like what we're doing, sharing life experiences. We cry when they cry. We celebrate when they celebrate. Just having life together. And we just do that every single week. We've been faithful to doing that for 20 years. And I don't even think now, with the worldwide pandemic, we've been canceled for the last two months, which devastates us all because, for 20 years, we've never missed, except maybe if there's been an incident here and there, But this has been the longest time we've ever had to miss, so we're looking forward to getting back to them, ladies. But it's a very good, rewarding program, and we also have the opportunity to put probably about 10 to 12 ladies completely through college. We pay for all their tuition, semester by semester, and all of their tuition, all their textbooks and all. And then when they graduate, we pick another one, and so on and so on. But we're not, we're not underwritten by any corporation or anything. It's all by donations of caring, individuals. And so we just, as the funds come in, we do what we can, But we've been ongoing for 20 years. And, we're called the mentor, but I know I just show up. I don't have, all the answers. I'm not some big mentor, I just show up consistently. God mentors all of us,
That's good.
If you remember, you remember that Bible scripture that says, where two or three are gathered, he's in the midst of us. That's what it is. We consistently show up, and the girls come to meet us, and he's the one that ministers to both of us, all of us, And I think I've ministered to thousands of women over these years, but he has changed my life in tremendous ways, by doing this. It's not just me going to tell them something. They have changed my life.
I want to use this term of, I really want to unpack a lot of that, because you can tell that you have a passion for a lot of this, but you had mentioned at the beginning that you had lost your father to suicide. How old were you when he ended up ending his life?
He was stationed up there in Alaska in the Army, and he had been in and out of the Army quite a few times, and he had went to Korea and, World War II, so he had a lot of things going on we didn't know, but I was a newborn. I was born, I was a preemie. I was born a month early. So I was, the baby stay in the hospital, while you gain weight and all that. So I wasn't even in the home yet. But my dad decided, for whatever reason, he shot himself. He was in the family car and he shot himself. My mom said he went to work and to the base and came back and killed himself in the car for whatever reason. But the reason why I mentioned about me being a preemie and stuff, because I was 3 weeks old when he did this. For whatever reason, he chose to kill himself on the exact day the new baby was supposed to come home to the family. Now I know, looking all these years back, that it had nothing to do with me. So when your dad kills himself on the day you're supposed to come home, that's when, like your podcast is called Why Me? Podcast, it's like, why me? Why would he do that on the day that I was supposed to come home, And so that's a question I'll never find out.
Yeah, and then you and your mom then moved to Oklahoma.
And my older sister, also, I had a sister, she's passed now, but I had an older sister that was 7 years older than me. And then my mom had lost three babies in between her and me. And then that's why I ended up in preemie, because my mother tried to miscarry me the whole time also, which is kind of keys in with the cancer that I had, because with my mom trying to miscarry me the whole time, the doctors back at those days gave her some medicine that was supposed to stop miscarriaging, which they found out later that it didn't. So this particular drug ended up causing, like, the women who took the drug back in those years, it caused their daughters, like me, and then even the sons, to have rare cancer. And they've figured out, they still study it after all these years, and they've figured out over 500,000 sons and daughters of the women that took this drug got the cancer. So the cancer that I had, I would have never had if they had never given that medicine to my mother, if that makes sense. I'm trying to explain it.
What was life like then growing up in Oklahoma? Because you said that you've had a faith ever since you were a young child.
you know, I really gave my heart to Christ when I was 16. But, you know, now, you know, looking back on my life, I can tell even when I was 3 weeks old, when my dad killed himself, you know, God had his hand on our life because, you know, he decided to end his life in the family car at the home. He could have snapped and killed all of us, you know, but God's hand, the protective hand, that didn't happen, you know. Mm-hmm. So he's just had his hand on us. But my family, my mom and my dad and all their relatives and even my sister were all born in Kansas. Back then, the family, they had a lot of abuse, and it wasn't a good family situation. So after my dad passed, and the military then told my mom that they would ship us, you know, move her, you know, wherever she wants to go back to move. She used to go back to the bad family life. So the reason why she came, the only reason why she came to Oklahoma, there was a couple that lived next door to them that was stationed there too. They were real good friends and helped her during that time. And they got shipped to Tinker Air Force Base. And so they invited her to move with them if she wanted to. And so she did. And that's the only reason. I used to tease my mom because I said, "Mom, the military is going to move you anywhere in the world. You can go anywhere, Rome, London, and you pick Oklahoma."
Yeah.
you never know why that worked out. But, I mean, you know, you could have went any exotic place and you pick Oklahoma. But, you know, it's been a good but you asked me, you know, how it was. You know, it was hard. I mean, my mom, you know, was suddenly a widow, and she, you know, she didn't have any formal training of, you know, she had worked jobs and stuff back then, but I mean, not any big jobs where she knew what to do or anything, you know. Even the couple that asked her to come to Oklahoma with them, 6 months later, they got shipped to Michigan, and they invited her to go with them again. But what she said to them was, you know, "I've got to learn how to be a single mom and take care of my babies. I might as well stay here and learn how to do it here, you know." Mm-hmm. And she did. And, you know, life was hard. Anytime you have, you know, a single mother with not much funds and stuff, you know, life was hard. You know, but we always had everything we needed. You know, we didn't always have everything we wanted, but my mom, you know, she was the best mother. She was, even the hard times that she's had and to raise us and, you know, living through her husband's suicide and all these things, you know, she was the most giving and generous person. She didn't let all those things, you know, make her bitter or anything. You know, she taught us she's the one that taught us how to have faith in Christ and how she, you know, she would take us to church and teach us how to, you know, to learn about God and how he protected us and all that and build a faith in us, you know. But it was, you know, life was hard. It wasn't all a bed of roses. One thing that kind of sticks out in my mind and people don't always think of is my mom never learned to drive. When she became a widow, she didn't have a car. She didn't know how to drive. So there was no car in the family. So me and my sister and my mom, anytime if we wanted to go to school or we wanted to go to the store or literally anywhere, we'd either have to walk to get there or we'd have to stay home or take a taxi or find a friend, you know. But, you know, so, I mean, that was kind of hard. And people think, "Oh, you're kidding me," you know. But no, but I mean, but it doesn't make my life any harder than anybody else because, you know, life happens to everybody, you know, hardships and good times, and, you know, life just happens, you know. But I knew it was hard back when I was growing up, but I didn't think of it being like, "Oh, I have such a horrible life," you know. And we had a good life. My mom, well, she passed in 2007. She ended up getting dementia, and I ended up quitting everything, my job and everything in my life in 2007 and be her caregiver for the last months of her life. And that kind of keys in with prison ministry also, if you let me swing it back around, because the very first woman that I mentored when I started the mentoring program at the prison was a lady named Cindy, and we ended up having so many things in common, and we just got along well, and I had mentored her the whole time she was, after that night, probably 5 or 6 years, and she ended up getting out and living a productive life and all these things. But at one time, and when my mom got ill, I had to move my mom into my home to take care of her. And Cindy then needed to change a place to live. And so I asked my mom if she would let Cindy live in her house, which is the house that I grew up in. And she said yes. So what all that meant was that Cindy, even though I mentored her, and I came to prison every week and saw her for years, you know, and we had a bonding and all those things. Then the Lord swung it back around, and Cindy got to help me during my mom's illness, because Cindy, you know, had a place to live, but she also helped me take care of my mom's home and did repairs and, you know, spruced it up and, you know, all sorts of things, lived there, took care of the home, you know. So she was actually able to help me in my time of need, just like I helped her, you know, if you understand what I'm trying to say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I mean, what goes around comes around, you know. I mean, it's just, it's not so much me doing, you know, volunteer work or doing this or that. It's God intervening. He knew back in, you know, when I started that mentoring program, the first night that I met Cindy, he knew down the road I was going to need her in 2007 to help me, you know, take care of my mom's home and all that, you know.
Yeah.
But God has everything all detailed. I mean, he works out things, and he just has his divine hand moving, you know, in my life. And looking back, I can see all the ways that he was there, you know, even on the times maybe I didn't know it, you know. He's always been there, you know, and I'm sure you guys have experienced that, you know.
Yeah, no, for sure. Well, you said that your faith really became your own when you were about 16, was it?
Yeah.
What was that moment like for you?
I had, because like my mom, she would always take us to church and different things when she could. We had to ride the church bus, you know, because we didn't have a car.
Right.
When we could, we could go to church, you know. But we had a really godly neighbor that lived next door, and she would take us to church sometimes. But every time I would see that particular neighbor, she would always turn the message around, you know, talking about Jesus. She would, but not in a preachy way, but, you know, in a lifestyle way, about how goodness, you know, God is good and how he loves us and how he provides. And you could just feel the presence of God, like, ooze out of that woman, you know. And I guess day by day, knowing her and her just ministering to me, and then the times I got to go to church and stuff, the Lord really just started working in my heart, and knowing that, hey, you know, I might not have an earthly father, but I have a heavenly father that's always been there, and he loves me, and he wants to be in my life, you know. And I don't know if I knew all of that exactly when I was 16, you know, but just something about God just drawing me through her talking to me. And then even, I think I made, if I remember right, because it's been a while, you know, but I remember actually getting down by the side of my bed one night after I had watched Billy Graham on TV and listened to his crusade, and you know how Billy Graham is, you know, and he just sealed the deal for me, really, you know, this is the time, you know, if you want to give your heart to Christ, you know, God loves you, all those things, you know. So when I was 16, I got down on my knees at the side of my bed, you know, and I just, as easy as a 16-year-old knows how, you know, I gave my heart to Christ, you know, and right there, and it's changed my life, you know, and it just helps me, opens my spiritual eyes to see that my Heavenly Father has been there even before I realized it, you know, that's another thing, if you know about people who grow up without a father in the home, you know. Girls especially get their security and their safety factors in their life from their dad, you know. And so when my dad was gone, you know, he wasn't in my life, you know. So I would always, like, struggle with insecurity or struggle with where I fit in. But that's another thing, see, because when I always struggled with, you know, where do I fit in? I didn't feel like I fit in, you know, at school, you know, because I couldn't interact with a lot of the kids in like, after-school activities because I couldn't get there, you know, because no car. And so I was kind of isolated a lot. And the very first day that I walked in behind the prison gates as a visitor to go visit our family member that was wrongly convicted, I knew that I was supposed to be there. That finally, somewhere on this earth, there was a place I could walk in that I actually felt like I was supposed to be there. You know, and I don't know if you've ever had a time like that in your life, but I knew, and because I know everybody's usually trying to get out of prison. You don't want to go. You know? I mean, you usually don't want to try to go to prison. You know, I don't want to go the way they went, you know, but I mean, it's just something God did. I knew that when I finally walked in there, and I didn't know until I went there, of course, but when I walked behind that gate, it's like, God, this is my place. This is where I'm, you know, this is where I sit. This is my purpose. This is what you called me. I mean, I don't know what it all means at this moment, but I know, I don't know what you're doing, you know. I know I'm supposed to be here, you know. I think when that happened, he ministered to my 16-year-old heart, you know, knowing that maybe I did in school and stuff, I didn't feel like I fit in, and the reason why is because I was so isolated, because, you know, we didn't have the car in the family, so we couldn't get to all the social activities and all those things, you know. But finally, I felt like I fit in now, you know, and it's been 22 years now, every week, except for, you know, except for this, like, COVID thing that's interrupted us. You know, it's just life changing, you know. And for anybody, you know, it doesn't have to be prison ministry. This happens to be what my thing is. But I mean, if God calls us, everyone who knows Him calls us, you know, to a passion and a purpose. You know, you guys, I don't know all your story, but you know, you guys talk to people on air and do radio and do all your things. Just when you're called to that, you know. When you find out what it is that you were born for and you can do it, you know, I mean, it's not even, it makes you speechless. There's not even words that you can describe to someone to say that you know that you're supposed to be doing it. You know, it might be like, you know, like some people, it might be like their music career or they're being a pastor or being a teacher or whatever it is, a doctor or whatever, you know. So when you finally walk into that, it's like, I get it, God. I finally get it, you know. So, can you tell I'm passionate about it?
No, that's good. I love it.
Well, it's awesome because not everyone can say that they're passionate about what they're doing. What were you doing at that point in your life before God awoke that passion in you?
You know, back in 81, you know, I got married and, of course, then I had my cancer and I had a big, long surgery and about a year and a half of, you know, completely recovering from all of that. So I did all that. And then, you know, I was just a housewife. And I worked a few jobs. You know, I've done retail. I was a pharmacy tech in different places for about 22 years of that. I think five different places I did. Dispensing. I used to like to tell people I was a drug pusher. I did that for a long time, and of course, and then those periods of times that I was just a housewife, didn't do anything outside the home for a while, and you know, go move from different jobs. But and I've worked at janitorial work. I've worked one time back when Crossroads Mall used to be in Oklahoma City. I worked at a little cookie place, and I used to pound out cookie dough and all sorts of stuff. Mm. You know, I used to. I don't know if you know, if you've ever heard of Hello Kitty franchise or whatever. It's a little. Yep. I used to be an assistant manager for a Hello Kitty store, and, you know, all sorts of stuff. Wow. You know?
And then 1998 hit, and that was the big change of you now switching your trajectory into really feeding into the lives of the women at the prison.
When I talk to people about prison ministry, and even, like, well, probably before I got involved with it, sometimes people don't, well, society doesn't think about prison too much, and they just think you did the crime, you do the time, you know, but they don't remember about all the wrongly convicted people, you know, and maybe things, or maybe they're not guilty of what they were arrested for, they might be guilty of something else. Until it happened to my life, it hit my life, you know, I might have thought about it, because I used to, you know, my letters for the Lord ministry, I corresponded with inmates for years, and I have volunteers to help me, because way back in the day, I used to have, like, some of my cousins and stuff would go to jail for a while, I'd write them, you know, so that kind of how that started, but I didn't ever think about really going physically to prison until it slaps your family in the face, you know. In Oklahoma, we are really bad locking up women in prison, and for over the last 25 years, we've been number one in the world, not just in the United States, but in the world for incarcerating women, and we make them serve 85% of their time before they even come up for parole, but we don't do that to all the men, you know, And so, I mean, here in the middle of the Bible Belt, you know, we are incarcerating women more than any place in the world. I used to have some of the inmates would tell me, come to Oklahoma on vacation and leave on probation. And that's just about how it is, you know.
So when it comes to, I mean, you decided that you're going to go and visit, and that now, I mean, 22 years later, you're still doing this. How important is relationship? How important is you having relationships with the women in the prison? Because I can honestly guess that for them to open up to you sometimes, it would take quite a bit.
Relationship is everything, you know, because if you go, and this is like anywhere, but if you go to prison and say, here I am, I'm going to save the day, you know. Mm-hmm. they can spot a phony a mile away, you mm-hmm. know, if you're there for some kind of odd reason or you're there to exploit them or, you know. But that's just like anywhere. Like if you're talking to someone in your radio business or whatever and you can tell if they're being kind of real or if they're kind of, you know, trying to pull a number, you know. But inmates, you know, they have to be aware. So they're very discerning, you know, if you're there for the right reason. If you really care about them. And that's why I mentioned that even though I have the title of volunteer mentor, doesn't mean I know that I go there and I'm giving them all the answers. You know, God's the one that has all the answers, you know. I just consistently show up. That's all I have to do. There's a lot of times, you know, you feel, even though I'm called to do that, some days you think, oh, Lord, you know, why am I going? I don't know how to help these women. You feel inadequate sometimes. And he reminds me, it's not about me. It's about him with them, you know. It's like, oh, yeah, you know. If you just consistently show up, you know, and then when you do that, you know, like then, of course, you know, you learn from them. You have relationships. They tell you about their lives. We share our lives. We share our testimonies of things that are hard, things that are easy. Just like we're doing right now, the things that we're doing right now, talking to each other about what's happening. That's what we do at prison. A lot of times people think, well, what do you talk to about? Well, the same thing I talk about family, you know, with or friends with. You know, they're just people just like us, you know, but society has made it, you know, the look of inmates as like they're monsters, you know, but they're not the majority. No, I say, you know, there's a few, you know, that you can maybe think, oh, gosh, they're kind of monsters, you know. I mean, you know, the notoriety, you know, like Charles Manson type figure, you know, but the majority of them are moms, especially if it's a female prison, but they're just moms that got caught up in something. And most of them, the majority of them, even the men and the women, the majority of them will get out, you know, serve the time and get out and go on and lead, you know, productive lives because just because you did something wrong or got caught up in something maybe 10 or 20 years ago, you're not that same person anymore. You know, hopefully you've matured, you've learned things, you've grown, and, you know, you don't have, but society, if you're in prison, they hold that against you for the rest of your life. You know, you're just a prisoner, you're just a number, you're just a monster, you this or that, until it happens to your own family because the system and all that doesn't tell you anything. I mean, it just happens. The way I found out about it, about her getting arrested for being wrongly convicted, is that it was a summer day. I think it was in August, and I had the TV on, but I was, you know, doing the dishes and doing whatever I was doing. The news came on, and news report, you know, because if you hear the news, a lot of times people hear the news and they think everything the news says is right until you find out it's all fake. Here comes this news report, and I happen to hear her name, and I was in the kitchen, but I heard her name, and so I went in the living room, and I thought, well, surely it's just someone else with another name, the same name or whatever. And they had the relative's picture on the TV saying, here's so-and-so, and she got arrested for such and such, and convicted her before, she, you know. But they put her on the news reporting that she was arrested for a crime she didn't commit, like she was guilty, before they even called her mother to tell her that she was arrested. They did not even let her call anybody for help or didn't even warn her mother. That's how the grandparents even found out about it, seeing the report suddenly on the TV, you know. And then we all raced down, you know, to the courthouse to see what in the world is going on. And, of course, then they're all full of reporters, you know, and asking you, what do you think about what's happening to your relative and this and this and this, you know? And it's like, how do you think we feel? We don't even know what the world's going on, you know? I mean, it's like vultures, you know? You know? But that's another thing. When I talk to people about prison ministry, and, of course, they were like me. I didn't really think about it that much until it slapped you in the face, you know? If we don't care about it, eventually it's going to happen to us. Either someone we're going to know is going to get arrested. God forbid we can get arrested. Because like in Oklahoma, like I was telling you, you know, we lock up women more than any place in the world. So, I mean, it doesn't, you have to blink your eye. You can go to prison, you know. Almost, I mean, it's not funny, but I mean, you know, somewhere in this world, especially the way the world's going now, it can happen to your family. And it doesn't mean that you're guilty when it happens to you. And there's a lot of, like, you know, you see on the news about people, you know, a lot of the men are getting out for being wrongly convicted, and they get exonerated and find out that they were never guilty at all. And they served, you know, like 40 years in prison, you know. How do you give back somebody's life after that, you know? I mean, what kind of money can you pay for ruining 40 years of someone's life? You can't.
We talk a lot about the fact that you've been doing this ministry for 22 years and that there are thousands of relationships that you've been a part of. So then how can we get involved? How can we help your ministry?
Well, we always take financial donations, you know, because for resources, so we provide Bibles, we provide study books, we provide, you know, helping with your college education and different things like that. So we always take donations, but as far as, like, the Letters for the Lord Prison Ministry part of it, which is the correspondence, I always need volunteers who are committed to actually wanting to minister to a life through mail. Also, locally here, you know, if someone's local in Oklahoma and wants to be a volunteer with us with our mentoring program, they can contact me about that, because there is a process you have to go through, because you have to go through the DOC's, the Department of Corrections, you know, volunteer. But we're always looking for volunteers. But also saying that, and even with the letters, you know, if you want to correspond with inmates, you have to be, you know, you want to make sure that you really feel called to do it, because, like, you might be in prison, you know, and when you get arrested for something, even if you're guilty or you're not, a lot of times your family disowns you, and of course, now God has restored a lot of families, you know, but a lot of times that happens. So you can be in prison 20 years, 30 years, and never get one letter or card except for, like, maybe from a religious organization or, you know, your lawyer or, you know, something like that. As far as a personal relationship, you know, with your family, a letter, a personal letter from someone you know and care about, you don't get those. And so that's where the need for them, and there's a lot of people that do correspondence to prisoners, but that's where the need is, because when you write them, you can share your faith, and you know, some prisoners, and there's a lot of prisoners that know Christ, so you can minister to them and fellowship and increase their faith and help them in that way. Or if you are writing them and you can tell that they don't know the Lord, you know, you can encourage them and give them scripture and witness to them and guide them towards that. Give them Bible studies. All sorts of, you know, however the Lord leads you to minister to someone. Only you just do it, you know, through the mail, and you can be a missionary just sitting at your kitchen table writing letters, you know. Mm-hmm. And so that's a very rewarding thing also. And it's not as, some people think going into prison is intimidating and scary, but going, you know, writing a letter, anybody can do that, you know. Anyone can do that.
And anyone can pick up a book also and read. And you've got five books. And if I'm not mistaken, if we purchase books, that also gets the finance to get directed into the prison ministry?
Yes. In 2014, I started, because I've always written poetry and I've written things, you know, all through the years. But I started self-published book starting in 2014. And all the proceeds that come in from that go back to it was a way for me to help, you know, with buying Bibles and different things, you know, for, that we need for the prison ministry, and for, you know, buying postage for, you know, for sending out letters, or, you know, different things, or whatever we do at the physical prison, you know, because we go through a lot of Bibles, we go through a lot of Christian books, devotionals, of course, you know, pens and paper and notebooks and all those kind of things, mm-hmm. and anything else that they might, you know, have need of that they allow us to provide. But I did, I have, right now I have like 5 books out that I, that all those proceeds that come in goes back to the prison ministry. And I also have a 6th book coming out in the near future, and it's actually a poetry book also that a friend and I co-wrote together. It's our first time we've ever co-wrote a book together, and we're going to put that out here pretty soon. Soon as the lay of this virus gets done, you know.
You're right.
So that'll be a good project also. But that proceeds from that book will also go back to prison ministry. But if anybody happens to be interested in that, because, you know, my books are easy. They're small. I have 2 of them right now that are actually poetry books, Field Words and On My Mind. Then another one of my books is called Pondering in the Word. And what it is, it corresponds right with the prison ministry, because I have Bible study outlines in that book that I actually taught at the prison over the years. And it's not all the ones that we've ever done, because we've done hundreds. It's just a sampling of some of the Bible study outlines that we've actually done inside the prison. And it was actually the girls that said, "Hey, you ought to put those in the book." So I did, you know. And then I have 2 other books, that, 2 volumes called Captive Thoughts. And they're just 2 volumes of 365 daily thoughts, you know, and inspirational thoughts to make you think. You know, it's something that you could just read one sentence each day if you wanted, or you could sit down and read the whole book, you know. None of my books are really thick, you know, they're just really easy reads. You could read them all in one sitting, or you could just read them a little at a time.
She has a passion and a heart of gold, at Linda Odell Author on Facebook and Instagram, at Letters4, The Lord on Twitter. Linda, we appreciate you, and thank you for sharing your story.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you guys, you know, for the opportunity to even speak with you guys today. It's an awesome blessing, and I thank you.
Big shout out and thank you again to Linda for taking some time and just sharing her heart.
Yeah, and being so open and vulnerable as well. An amazing story. And of course, she's got her books that you can go through and her amazing ministry that you can read up more on.
All right. If you want to tell a friend, a family member, a complete stranger, we encourage you to do that. You can check it out on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, on Stitcher, on SoundCloud.
And of course, you can always head to faithstrongtoday.com.